desatando la furia del mar.
Que me gusta la gente que lleva la sangre caliente, nunca se olvida.
You're listening to 99.5 FM, WBAI, New York.
Non-commercial, listener-sponsored.
Peace and Justice Radio.
Now stay tuned for Equal Time for Free Thought.
Good evening, everyone. My name... I woke up, Sean. I didn't realize it was so loud. Good evening, everyone.
Action.
I'll calm down. Too excited. My name is Barry Simon, and this is Equal Time for Free Thought, your forum to explore the non-religious evidence-based worldview built upon the foundation of scientific naturalism and secular humanism. On this program, we examine how the humanist worldview leads to progressive social change. What in the world was that? Someone shot me with an arrow or something.
Okay.
Thank you. Normally, you'd be hearing this Sunday evening news at this time. They'll be back probably next week. The theme of this special fund drive today, we have a two-hour show. We'll be on till 8 o'clock, is African-Americans' rich and long tradition of taking a secular and humanistic view of the world, a tradition that today is almost completely overlooked. During the first hour of two, we'll be playing a pre-recorded interview with Dr. Anthony Pinn, a philosopher and professor of religion and humanist studies, and an interview with veteran activist Professor Muntu Matsumila. I really said that right. Good, I'm glad. Whew. For those of you supporting WBI this evening, you can call us in, as always, at 212-209-2950 to become a new member or renew your membership to Peace and Justice Radio. Think about pledging $100 for the book by Anthony Pinn, which we'll explain to you soon. The book is called African-American Humanist Principles, Living and Thinking Like the Children of Nimrod. And during our second hour, we'll be speaking with the director of the Hayden Planetarium, astrophysicist Dr. Neil deGrasse Tyson. Again, for those supporting WBAI, calling in at 212-209-2950 can receive, for a pledge of $125, the full four one-hour episodes of Dr. Tyson's epic PBS miniseries about the origins of our universe, the Earth, and life itself. It's called Origins. And by the way, the music you will be hearing in the background today is from the soundtrack of Cosmos, available separately from this program at www.carlsagan.com. We're using this because, of course, Cosmos and Origins have similar themes, and the music is soothing, at least for me. So now, in a few moments...
I feel soothed.
Okay. Thank you, Arnell.
Yes.
So now, in a few moments, my colleagues...
All right.
Arnell Dore, who just said all right. Neil Murphy. Hi, Neil. You say it's radio. They can't see you.
Neil did something.
I have a great face for radio.
Nonverbal, but friendly.
And Sansara Taylor. Sansara, hi.
How you guys doing? I'm good.
They'll explain more about what our guests today represent in the light of humanism and what you need to do to support WBI and Equal Time for Free Thought. So now, I'll give it to Arnell DeRay. Arnell?
Okay. And we've got the amazing, incomparable Sean Rhodes at the board here. Just want to acknowledge that. Well, it's widely accepted, Barry, that faith and religious belief have been the most important element sustaining the African-American community throughout their long history of subjugation to oppression and adversity. But even in the black church, otherworldly concerns were far less important than it's generally believed. The secular and humanistic traditions are long-standing threads in African-American life that are hardly ever mentioned. Yet it's out of these traditions that the real-world strategies and real-world solutions have yielded the greatest strides toward Black liberation and empowerment. And out of those strands is where those strides have been developed and deployed. So what might happen if African Americans today more fully embrace their rich history of naturalistic traditions? How might it make a difference for the future? So today we have a book that we're featuring by Dr. Anthony Pinn, as you had said, Living Like the Children of Nimrod, African American Humanist Principles. And this book goes over the long, rich history that we're referring to. We have an interview with Dr. Anthony Pinn. Dr. Anthony Pinn also refers to the most recent strong secular movement being that of the Black Panthers. And we have an interview with our own, as you said, Muntu Matsumela, who was formerly involved with the Black Panthers. And Neil, why don't you tell us what the premiums are and what needs to be contributed for our listeners.
Thank you very much, John.
We're at 212-209-2950. Thank you, Barry. Yes.
Okay, 212-209-2950. Good evening, everyone. Again, you're listening to the Equal Time for Free Thought two-hour fundraising special to raise funds for 99.5 FM WBAI in New York. And we have two major premiums here tonight, which, of course, you can give at a variety of levels. And we're going to start off with our basic membership to WBAI at the $25 level. Again, $25 gets you the basic membership to WBAI. At the $65 level, you get the basic membership to WBAI plus a complimentary cup, hat, or t-shirt or mug. And the two major premiums we have here tonight, at the $100 level, we have, as mentioned before, the book by Dr. Anthony Pinn, Living Like the Children of Nimrod, African American Humanist Principles. And at the $125 level, we're offering a four one-hour set of Origins by Dr. Neil deGrasse Tyson. And again, I want to stress the importance here tonight of why we're doing this program. I mean, WBAI is known for, you know, its public affairs program, its arts program, and bringing a variety of perspectives and a variety of cultures. Well, this is also a cultural affairs station, and tonight we're going to bring you a sometimes often overlooked and much neglected part of the humanist experience, which is the African-American humanist experience. And we're going to explore and bring to you the perspectives of the African-American humanist cultural tradition and its impact not only on the past, present, but also the future. We're going to discuss tonight with Dr. Anthony Pinn about positive humanist principles, not only present in the African-American community, but also that have been present in past and in the future. And we're going to be speaking with Neil deGrasse Tyson on Origins, the 4 one-hour series we're offering here today at the $125 level. Again, almost Arnell picks right up where Cosmos left off in a lot of ways, and the importance of a science-based understanding of the world.
Yeah, I mean, Origins is just amazing because it gives us a connection to understanding where we came from. And at this time, when you've got people that are going around saying that the Earth is 6,000 years old, Origins is more needed than ever. And we'll be going into that with Dr. Tyson during our second hour. Let me just read you guys a review from Anthony Pinn's book, African American Humanist Principles. In this original and groundbreaking book, Anthony Pinn provides a creative proposal for a new field of study. Through his thorough and insightful analysis of the history and principles of Black humanist thought, Pinn expands our understanding of the complexity and richness of African American philosophy, culture, and ethics. In his compelling vision of the methodology and pedagogy of Black humanist studies, Pinn provides clear, thought-provoking directions for further interdisciplinary research. This is an invaluable work, one sure to be the catalyst for significant new developments in theological and ethical reflection. And that's by Sharon Welch, Professor of Religious Studies at the University of Missouri-Columbia. And there's the editor's description is, as Anthony Pinn argues in his latest collection, humanism comes in many colors. When more attention is given to issues of race as connected to other forms of oppression, it's easier to see the manner in which humanism has lived and functioned within African-American communities. using the biblical figure Nimrod as symbol, African American Humanist Principles demonstrates African American Humanists' intellectual and praxis-related grounding in a history of rebellion against overdetermined and oppressive limitations on human doing and being. Pin maintains that it is this quest for a fuller sense of being, for greater existential and ontological worth, that informs the basic principles of African-American humanism. African-American Humanist Principles is one of the only books to present the inner workings of humanist principles as the foundation for humanism from the African-American perspective, its form, its content, nature, and meaning. And that book is available at the $100 level, so if you can support this program and support WBAI, you also will be able to thank you with a book that will really make you question some of the presumptions that are common. I mean, it's been raised on this program to us that having a humanist orientation or a reason-based or science orientation is primarily a Eurocentric orientation, and that couldn't be further from the truth. The fact is that it was in Africa where humans first made crucial observations about their environment that empowered them to be able to do agriculture and domesticate animals and understand the workings of the sky. And in Africa, that all of our primary fundamental tool making developed, and all of our principles that our entire wealth of knowledge that came after that point was based on. And of course, Africa contains Egypt, where all of this came together and expressed itself in the foundations of all of our basic foundational mathematics and our understanding of astronomy.
And not only is it wrong, Arnell, that as far as I see it, that, you know, there is no sort of Eurocentric bias in science, but also that, as we're going to discuss later with Neil deGrasse Tyson, that it's very important for the African American community, and also that there is a long tradition and understanding that only a science-based and reason-based view of the world can create the enlightenment and the positive society and the principles that we all seek together in the future. I mean, certain things unite us together as progressives, a vision of the world that emphasizes economic and social justice and seeing a better tomorrow. And too many, of course, as we know, religious leaders who claim to be profit-driven really are only monetarily profit-driven, as we've seen in the rise of megachurches through the so-called black religious leadership that in many ways have failed to deliver on the promises of a better future. Well, tonight we're here to offer an alternative to that vision that says that only in the religious community can African Americans find their enlightenment. The African American humanist tradition, which we're going to talk about here tonight on WBAI, provides a form and an understanding for the same issues that the so-called religious leadership have failed to deliver for African Americans, past, present, and future. Well, tonight we have two major premiums that we're going to offer here. At the $100 level, we're going to be having Anthony Pinn's new book, Living Like the Children of Nimrod, discussing African-American humanist principles.
That's actually a subtitle, Neil.
It's a subtitle.
Yeah, the actual full title is
African-American humanist principles, Living Like the Children
then
of
the
Nimrod.
Then the subtitle is Living
Like the Children. Okay, mm-hmm. So I flipped the order around. Okay.
But just so people know what we're talking
totally
about.
Totally understand.
Only works if you turn the book upside down.
Well, absolutely. $125 level, we're also offering 4 one-hour compilation of Origins, the series by Michael Eric Dyson, which in reality picks up where Cosmos.
No. Neil deGrasse Tyson. Although it's a good, poetic coupling.
Well, that's certainly true.
You know, you've got a rhythm and all right. Anyway.
Neil deGrasse Tyson, yes. $125 level, yes. 4 one-hour compilation. Again, picks up.
Although Michael Eric Dyson is no slouch either.
Not at all.
So, anyway.
He's certainly
yes.
welcome to come on Equal Time for Free Throw anytime he'd like.
Yes.
A little cheap plug
that's
there.
That's an open invitation. Open invitation.
The open invitation. There
yes.
you go.
Yes.
So, again, $125 level, but we also have the basic membership at the $25 level to WBAI. And at the $65 level, we have the basic membership to WBAI plus a tote bag, mug, T-shirt, or cap. Give us a call, folks, 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950.
Right. And, you know, Neil, it's interesting that you slipped with Michael Eric Dyson because he is a key figure in some of the controversy in the African-American community about this notion that Bill Cosby brought up about being responsible and about people taking, pulling themselves up by their own bootstraps and taking responsibility for their lives and acting in a way that will bring success into their lives, as opposed to choosing to be unsuccessful, as Bill Cosby has charged. And Michael Eric Dyson really took that on. And I think that that relates to African-American humanism in a very basic way, at least from the perspective that I have, which is that if we understand how social science tells us about what humans need to be able to function, we won't expect them magically to be able to do something that their environment hasn't supported. And we won't expect them to magically become whatever somebody says, oh, well, you better be this if you want to succeed. We will understand, if we have a reason-based understanding of the human experience, then we're going to understand that, you know, what you put in is what you get. And obviously, if we want people to be able to function better, we need to put in the supports that are going to be able to make that happen. And given the way our educational system has been disenfranchised in the inner cities, and given the way that we've basically turned school into a testing machine and don't have community programs and no money for community facilities in many African-American neighborhoods, to expect anything else but what we get is insane.
212-209-2950. Again, 212-209-2950. We're offering two major premiums here tonight. At the $100 level, we're offering the book by Dr. Anthony Pinn, African-American Humanist Principles, Living Like the Children of Nimrod. And at the $125 level, we're offering Origins by Neil deGrasse Tyson. Make sure I get that right. Neil deGrasse Tyson, $125 level. Again, picks up right where Cosmos left off, explores the wonder, awe, and beauty of what it means to have a science-based understanding of the world, a reason-based understanding of the world. And I believe throughout the show, or now we're going to be playing some clips of that.
Yeah, let's actually play a clip from Origin, which since Sarah has reminded us that we should do here, which we'll play the first clip from Origins, which is, let's see, what clip is it? It would be track 10. Yeah, let's play a clip from Origins about how life began. This is the very beginning of the How Life Began episode.
212-209-2950. Feel free to call in. Again, this is Origins by Neil deGrasse Tyson.
In the endless reaches of the universe, Earth seems unique. It's a planet shaped and molded by life. A planet that 6 billion people call home today. But when it was born, some 4.5 billion years ago, Earth was a violent place. So hostile, it's hard to believe life could ever begin here. Covered in lava and smothered in noxious gases, Earth was a planet under siege.
If you were human going back into time and trying to stand on the early Earth, it would be just like visiting a planet that was not your own.
This was a hazardous world, no doubt about that. If you were located in the wrong place at the wrong moment, you were simply vaporized.
It was a planet plagued by catastrophe. If you condense all of Earth's history to just 24 hours, then only minutes after it formed, the entire globe melted and reformed. Then, to make matters worse, another planet about the size of Mars slammed into Earth. A cataclysm that created our moon. But soon after these disastrous beginnings, the most radical transformation of all time hit the planet. The origin of life. So how did life begin?
Well, over the years, people have come up with some pretty creative answers to this question. One of my favorites comes from a 17th century scientist who wrote down a recipe for creating life from scratch. Let's see. It says here, take a dirty garment, place it in a vessel. Next, add wheat. Then, according to the recipe, after fermenting for 21 days, mice will appear, fully formed. Of course, we all know that life doesn't form this way. But at some point in Earth's early years, life did emerge out of non-living ingredients. And for clues to the real recipe of life, we have to go back some 4 billion years to a time when Earth was nothing like the planet we know today.
When we think of early Earth, we must recognize it was not a Garden of Eden. There were no clear blue oceans. There was no clear water. There were no plants. There was no life at all.
The young sun was weaker than it is today.
And we're back. Animal Mike is on. And we're back here at 99.5 FM WBAI in New York. Again, you were listening to a clip from Origins by Neil deGrasse Tyson, which we're offering here in a four-episode compilation at the $125 level. Again, we're offering that at the $125 level, but we're also offering at the $100 level the book by Dr. Anthony Pinn called African-American Humanist Principles, Living Like the Children of Nimrod, again, where he discusses the importance not only of African-American humanist principles today, but showing its long and rich cultural tradition. And I believe we have, Arnell, a interview with him.
Yes, we have an interview which we'll play the first part of. Dr. Anthony Pinn is the Agnes Cullen Arnold Professor of Humanities and the Professor of Religious Studies at Rice University in Houston, Texas. He received his Master of Divinity of Theology in 1989 from Harvard University. Dr. Pinn is the author of numerous articles and books on the history and religious lives of African Americans, including titles such as The African American Religious Experience in America, Why, Lord? Suffering and Evil in Black Theology, By These Hands, a documentary of the history of African-American humanism, and, of course, our thank you premium for this fund drive, which you can get at calling 212-209-2950, African-American Humanist Principles, Living and Thinking Like the Children of Nimrod. On clip number two, we actually have what Nimrod, what he means by Nimrod, and this is from an interview that we did with Dr. Pinn last summer. So why don't we play that first, and he'll tell us
Could you explain the title of your book, African-American Humanist Principles, Living and Thinking Like the Children of Nimrod? What does it mean to think like the children of Nimrod?
Well, this Nimrod figure receives brief mention in the Hebrew Bible. Most closely associated with the Tower of Babel. And within Scripture, he gets a bad rap. The argument is that with Nimrod, you get an attempt on the part of humans to overtake God, to make their will supreme, and that God steps in and puts an end to this process. That's the traditional take on Nimrod. My argument is there are other ways to read the story of Nimrod, that African Americans, like other folks, have provided creative ways of understanding Scripture, and we've not always taken Scripture at face value. Right? That's why we could say, irrespective of what Paul says, slavery's not right. And it seems to me that we needed to provide a more liberating interpretation of Nimrod, and this is what I try to do. It seems to me another way to read Nimrod is to understand Nimrod as exercising, in a rather creative and imaginative way, human potential. But with a cautionary note, that human potential can often result in harm as well as good, and that we've got to exercise our potential, our creativity, in ways that take into consideration the welfare not only of self, but of the larger community, right? That it's an exercise of our abilities, our capabilities, but with a cautionary note and a sense of humility.
And that was an excerpt from our interview with Dr. Anthony Pinn discussing the premise and foundation for his book, African American Humanist Principles, Living and Thinking Like the Children of Nimrod. I want to briefly go over the four premiums that we have here tonight, and then we'll go back to our interview with Anthony Pinn. The basic membership to WBAI is at the $25 level. At the $65 level, we're offering the basic membership to WBAI plus a t-shirt, tote bag, cap, or mug. And the two major premiums that we have here tonight, at the $100 level, we have the book by Dr. Anthony Pinn, of which you just heard a clip a moment ago. The book is entitled African American Humanist Principles, Living and Thinking Like the Children of Nimrod. And at the $125 level, we have the four-part miniseries
by two DVD set.
Yeah, Neil deGrasse Tyson at the $125 level,
right,
called Origins. And now we're going to go back to our interview with Dr. Anthony Pinn talking about African American Humanist Principles.
Yes, and I just want to say, what in the clip you're about to hear of the interview, Dr. Pinn talks about the book and he goes into what his basic premise is. He also describes how the blues and folk traditions reflect a here and now focus, and he discusses how many naturalists don't necessarily prescribe to a progressive understanding of human behavior. And this is kind of interesting because we were taught one point of it really kind of interesting point in our interview is when Dr. Pinn was talking about the naturalist tradition, he was talking about the belief in not waiting around for God to come solve problems, but actually being independent and taking responsibility for ourselves and doing it ourselves. This is a very different take on naturalism than we bring here at this program in terms of understanding really that humans are a part of a chain of cause and effect, and volition doesn't spring from us, and you can't really, this idea of responsibility is in the way I was looking at it, far more associated with religion than with a scientific understanding about what makes humans behave as they do. So Dr. Pinn he was reflecting back on that and pointing out very interestingly that the opinion on that doesn't really cut across naturalist, supernaturalist lines. Sometimes you get people from either side who believe the thing you wouldn't normally expect. So here's the interview.
So welcome back to Equal Time for Free Thought, Dr. Pinn. We're offering your book, African American Humanist Principles, Living Like the Children of Nimrod.
Yeah, it looks at African American humanism in a variety of ways. One, it looks at African American humanism as a form of life, right, as a life practice. It also looks at African American humanism as a way of interpreting the world. Right. Mm-hmm. Scholars would call it a hermeneutic, right? A way of interpreting the world.
Mm-hmm.
It looks at it in those two primary ways. And I'm also concerned in that book with tracing the history of African-American humanism. And I begin that with a personal note, a short autobiographical statement.
Right, right.
Because concerning how I've come to humanism.
Right, because you had said that having to do with the way that suffering was accounted for being inadequate through the church.
Yes, and I would argue through theistic orientations more generally.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. In that it seems to either blame divine will, or do you also include that individuals will be blamed for their own suffering?
My argument is that if you're going to have a God who is loving, kind, just, and compassionate, somewhat involved in the world, and my primary critique is with the Black church tradition, because it is the dominant form of religious expression in African American communities, right? And my argument is, if you're going to have a God who is in any way loving, kind, just, and compassionate, you have to raise this question, why this disproportionate human suffering? And the way in which that question has been addressed within African-American Christianity has resulted in a position that I find somewhat troubling, the idea that suffering is redemptive in nature.
Mm, right. Okay.
And I don't think a position of redemptive suffering allows for a sustained attack against the mechanisms of injustice.
Right.
But I don't think African American theists, Christians in particular, can move away from this redemptive suffering model, because it requires bringing into question the existence, or at the very least, the goodness of God. But that's only part of my work. My larger argument is there are a variety of ways in which African Americans have expressed themselves religiously. Not all of those forms of religious expression are theistic in orientation, uh-huh. and that we've not given due attention to the ways in which humanism has served as an important approach for African Americans.
Yes, when we spoke to you back in August, you had said that there were a number of secular African-American traditions, and I did want to ask you to speak a little bit more about them, because you touched on them, you sort of listed them. You had said, going back to the earliest, there's the blues and there's folk wisdom, mm-hmm. and maybe you could talk a little bit more about those.
Well, my argument is that the blues develop very early, and they provide an alternate sensibility, that it's rather difficult to confuse the blues and the spirituals because of their orientation, that the blues tend to promote a this-worldly orientation that at the very least holds suspect claims concerning the transcendent. And so I want to give some attention to how notions of human accountability and responsibility, basic principles of humanism, get played out within that musical form. And I think you also get these sorts of humanistic principles and sensibilities being worked out in African-American folk tales. For example, these rather popular stories of the rabbit. Brer Rabbit, in one of these stories, isn't very happy about having a short tail. Mm-hmm. Wants a long tail, mm-hmm. complains about this short tail not serving a very useful function. It's no good for swatting flies, etc., and takes this complaint to the big house, right? And that merits some unpacking, but that's for another day.
Okay.
Has this conversation with God. God, in response, gives the rabbit a variety of tasks that need to be performed before the long tail can be granted. The rabbit performs all these tasks and goes back to God. God is angry about this. The rabbit runs off, and what you hear is God screaming at the rabbit, "If you're so smart, get your own long tail." Now, some folks in African-American religious studies interpret that to mean African-Americans, even at that stage, understood the dilemmas with white Christianity and posed a challenge in their folk wisdom to white Christianity. That is not clearly indicated within these stories. It seems to me another way to read this sort of story involves a kind of radical commitment to human accountability, human responsibility, human ingenuity over against a reliance on God.
Right, right.
So I think you get this sort of humanistic ethos developing within African-American life very early on. And you also get this sort of conversation explicitly presented within the mid-decades of the 20th century, and even earlier through African-American involvement in the Communist Party and African-American communists raising questions concerning African-American Christians' over-reliance on transcendence and the divine, providing a critique of that sort of sensibility. As of the mid-century, you also have African-Americans who express humanistic sensibilities within the structural arrangements of the Unitarian Universalist Association, for example. Uh-huh. So there are a variety of ways in which African-Americans have expressed a humanistic sensibility, but scholars and others have been reluctant to acknowledge that.
It seems that you're putting on one side the reliance on a divine intervention for solving problems, and you're contrasting that with a more practical, of this world, we have to take responsibility for ourselves kind of orientation as being representative of something that is more humanistic and mm-hmm. of this world. Mm-hmm. My orientation is there are two messages in traditional religion, one about God's grace and relying on God, but in Protestant traditions really seems to be this rugged individuality, personal responsibility that God helps those who help themselves, as mm-hmm. Benjamin Franklin mm-hmm. said. This is very Americana kind of ethos that isn't necessarily contradicting religious teachings. It's just a different strain of religion that we're personally responsible, whereas humanism and science and what social science in particular has told us about the human experience is that we cannot think of ourselves as responsible in those kind of ways and leave out of the equation all the institutional forces that make us who we are, and genetic advantages and disadvantages that people don't choose, and all the circumstances that we find ourselves in. And it seems like the emphasis on personal responsibility is not a divergence from religious thinking. It's a divergence from scientific thinking about what makes us act as we do.
Well, certainly in a variety of religious forms, there's a kind of radical individualism. I think one of the issues is you can make the Bible, right, the primary text for Christians, say anything you want it to say, depending upon how one selects scripture and how one reads and interprets that scripture. And again, I'm a humanist as well, but let's look at this. Let's look at the complexity of this kind of theological arrangement, right? You have on one hand some who would argue we are ultimately responsible for what takes place in the world, and their understanding of that statement involves a kind of individualized acquisition of material goods that doesn't call into question the mechanisms of oppression, right?
Right.
But there has historically also been those who've made a very similar argument that humans are accountable and responsible for what takes place in the world. They've made that argument, and they've done so out of a sense of socioeconomic and political responsibility. We tend to call those folks very early on social gospelers.
Uh-huh.
But we also see this being played out in figures like Martin Luther King Jr. and others, right? A kind of an understanding of individual responsibility within the context of community, right? This kind of individual responsibility that has to feed a critique and restructuring of social dynamics, sociopolitical and economic mechanisms.
Yeah, it seems that King's tradition is very much coming from, even though he puts everything in religious context, it really seems that he's very much rolling up his sleeves and very much looking at the world as a social scientist and saying, what are the dynamics that are oppressing?
But doing that out of his religious faith and commitment. There are a variety of positions within Black church tradition, and not all Black church orientations revolve around that sort of sensibility that we are accountable for the wrong that takes place in this world, right? That if we just exercise more faith, things will work out. No, there are certain orientations within Black church tradition that also speak to a much more mature and complex social theory, right, that recognizes the ways in which systemic realities impact our lives, mm-hmm. right, and that are not extremely otherworldly in orientation. So I want to provide a kind of sense of how all of this happens within Black church tradition, kind of present the complexity of Black church traditions.
Right.
Right. I mean, I just want to point to the complexities within all of these situations and argue that you've got theists who use their belief in God as a way of short-circuiting social critique, and you have theists who use their commitment to the divine as a way of enlivening their social critique. In the same way, I would argue you have humanists who use their sensibilities as a way to promote a kind of individualized take on the world without any kind of communal responsibility.
Absolutely, yes. This is certainly true, and you're right, and it is very ironic that you can meet lots of people who will call themselves humanists, but they actually are rugged individualists in a way that seems very consistent with God helps those who help themselves, and a theory of behavior that is very divorced from understanding cause and effect.
Right, right, and that, you know, and it seems to me that we have to be on our toes and uphold groups accountable and responsible. And so, you know, my argument would also be that, again, being a humanist, I understand that humanists have a certain type of relationship to science, but that relationship to science, to supposed objectivity, doesn't always rule out positions that are racist, sexist, etc.
I agree with that. However, one thing that I'm concerned with is that we don't just say that everything winds up being equal, because I do think that there are some approaches to understanding the human situation that are more accurate or have a higher likelihood of giving us accurate, effective information and useful analyses mm-hmm. and effective solutions than others.
I would agree with that. I would simply say that every position has to be interrogated.
That's
that
true.
No one gets a pass.
Yeah. No, this is certainly true.
Okay, you've been listening to Arnell interviewing Anthony Pinn, author of
African American Humanist Traditions, Living Like the Children of Nimrod.
And this is part of our two-hour special fundraising drive, Equal Time for Free Thought, here on WBAI. If you're listening, please call us now at 212-209-2950. We have several packages to thank you for your membership. Basic membership at WBAI is $25. Call 212-209-2950. We'll be getting back to the interview in just a minute. We have, at the $65 rate, you get the basic membership to WBAI, plus a complimentary cup, hat, t-shirt, or mug. For $100, you can get the book, Living Like the Children of Nimrod. Help me out here again.
Yeah, African-American Humanist Principles, Living Like the Children of Nimrod.
By Anthony Pinn, who the author you're listening to an interview with, and we'll be back to that in just
a
moment.
And it's really an amazing book. From what I can see, I mean, it just really has such a rich history of tracing, going back over 200 years and tracing the rich
roots of
history
that African American
just isn't known today.
And fills an important need.
Yeah, it's just not known today. Yeah.
And finally, at our $125 rate, we have a very special four-part Nova PBS miniseries called Origins, 14 Billion Years of Cosmic Evolution, hosted by author Neil deGrasse Tyson. We'll be speaking to him in about 20 minutes. He'll be joining us for the show. This is a $125 rate. You can call us at 212-209-2950 or go pledge online at wbai.org.
Right. Okay. Let's
your calls coming in, folks. Yeah, our tally is, how do we put this?
Our tally needs to come
a little
up.
Low.
We want to keep playing you the interview. So if you call in, that helps us get back to the interview. We want to hear from you, our listeners.
Yeah, we can play more clips.
212-209-2950. Come on, support Equal Time for Free Thought so we can be there for you in the months and years to come. We've got some great things planned. I just can't think of any of them right now.
Well, actually
yes.
That's brilliant.
That's uplifting, I got to tell you.
Actually, the next 2 weeks, we're going to have something special. We're going to have a guest on that we've never had on before. Noam Chomsky is going to be on Equal Time for Free Thought for a two-part special.
You might have heard of him.
Talking about Chomsky and humanism. He's going to talk about religion and politics and all the stuff that Chomsky talks about so well. So,
and then in June, we're going to have a two-part special with Tom Clark from the Center for Naturalism, who just published a book which is Encountering Naturalism, which is really the first time that naturalism as a way of life, as a practical guide to living, the wisdom that naturalism teaches us is being put together in one volume. And we're going to have a two-part special where we're going to take listener calls about this, because there are probably a lot of questions out there about what it means to live a naturalistic life and how it empowers us personally.
212-209-2950. Let's just restate the four premiums that we're going to be offering here tonight and are offering here tonight. And if you just tuned in at 6:45 and you're listening to 99.5 FM, WBAI in New York, program is Equal Time for Free Thought. I am Neil Murphy, along with Sincera Taylor, Arnell Del Rey, and Barry Seidman. We're in the middle of a two-hour fundraising special to raise funds for WBAI. And our four fundraisers are this. $25 is the basic membership to WBAI. At the $65 level, we are offering the basic membership plus a T-shirt, cap, mug, or tote bag. At the $100 level, we're offering the book African American Humanist Principles, Living and Thinking Like the Children of Nimrod by Dr. Anthony Pinn. And we've been playing that in an interview that Arnell conducted with him. And at the $125 level, we're offering the Nova PBS 4-episode miniseries Origins, And we're going to be having an interview with Neil deGrasse Tyson a little bit later on, around 7 o'clock. Again, very important that you support this station. This is the only show we are going to hear a critical, free-thinking perspective on the issues of the day, and we are going to get a science and reason-based approach to life. And it's so important in these critical times you give us a call.
212.
Support the station.
209-2950. Okay, so let's go to the last segment of our interview with Dr. Penn, because we're kind of we're running low
call
on time
in, we
here.
Need you.
So we'll go to our last segment where Dr. Penn talked about how the Black Panthers maintained a secular ideology while assessing the social networks of the churches. And what the track that is we're talking about clip number 6. And let's go to that. And that was the end of our interview with Dr. Penn. So we'll play that right now.
I think within the context of African-American struggle for equality, lots of figures have understood the importance of churches. For if for no other reason than within these churches, you have large groups of people who can be contacted quite easily.
Mm-hmm. If there's an organizational
principle, right? And that these,
yeah.
Within this context, you have resources.
Right.
And so that seemed to be the case at some point with the Black Panther Party. Connect with these churches because of their potential, because of the resources they represent, because of the numbers of African Americans housed within these churches. But in terms of the theological platform of these churches, the doctrinal sensibilities, no. That at one point, Huey Newton argues that this reliance on God, this notion of God, has served a particular purpose, but we've outgrown it.
Hmm. Okay, well, this is great, and I think you really have some very brilliant insights into these issues, and I thank you so much for sharing them with us.
Well, I've enjoyed the conversation. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Penn. Hope to speak with you again soon.
Yes, certainly.
Great. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
212-209-2950. $100 level is, brief clip. $100 level is the book by Dr. Penn, and it's really an epic work. It's really a huge book, and actually a discussion that needs to be had. You need this book to really understand a part of African American history that is really neglected.
And this is a scholarly academic text.
Yeah.
So it's not just a book for the popular masses as well. So
right.
Even though you can understand, you don't have to be an academic to understand it.
Yes, absolutely. This is something that you generally is.
Thank you, caller.
It is a scholarly work, and the book also. The fact is that when we think about the way the African American community is portrayed in the media, you would only think that, this is a religious, supernatural oriented people, and you just don't really get the rich pool of discovery and invention and commitment to reason and a here and now practical focus that Dr. Penn outlines so well in his book.
It's interesting, in the last clip, even this topic, a lot of the times the Black church is given a lot of credit for the civil rights movement, the Black liberation struggle, and in fact, as was just referenced, the more that these struggles grew and the more radical and liberatory they got, the more there was a breaking away of the church, from the church.
Absolutely.
And I think this is a buried part of history,
mm-hmm.
and it is one that really needs to be dug up and accessed today, especially.
Absolutely. And we have next for you a clip with WBAI's own Muntu Matsumela. And he had an experience being a former Black Panther, so let me just set that clip up.
As you are getting that ready, I want to remind the listeners, 212-209-2950. We need to hear from you. You are the ones who keep this station going every week. We're able to bring you this programming because of you, our listeners. So call in 212-209-2950.
We need you now more than ever, folks. It's very important you give us a call. Again, Equal Time for Free Thoughts, the only show that's going to not only promote, protect, and defend the non-religious point of view and about positive humanist principles, about what we need to survive and how we need to survive with a reason-based approach to life that emphasizes the importance of interconnectedness and, most importantly, the interest of showing why in today's society You know, while religion practices the politics of exclusion, humanism is the only philosophy that practices the politics of inclusion. And the African-American humanist tradition and African-American humanism in general understands that inclusive tradition, which is why we're taking this two-hour fundraiser to demonstrate to you why it's so important that this tradition is discussed here at WBAI. And we're offering the book by Dr. Anthony Pinn, The African-American Humanist Tradition, Living and Thinking Like the Children of Nimrod, at the $100 level. And we're also offering the PBS miniseries, The Four-Part Origins by Neil deGrasse Tyson, at the $125 level. Folks, we need you now more than ever. 212-209-2950. Give us a call and support WBAI.
Okay, so now our next clip will be with Professor Muntu Matsumel, who's a fellow producer and WBAI supporter. He's a veteran activist attorney who became involved in progressive politics at the age of 16. He's presently a professor of African American studies at City University of New York at John Jay College, among the many local, national, and international progressive organizations in which Professor Matsumela has been involved was his time as a community organizer for the Black Panther Party. He agreed to discuss how and why the Panthers were decidedly secular.
Professor Matsumela, what was your involvement in the Black Panther Party?
My first contact with the Black Panther Party was right after high school. It was actually the summer of 1968. I became a community organizer for the Black Panther Party in 1970, around February 1970. And that was out of the Ministry of Information in Boston Road in the South Bronx. My contact with the party was almost on a daily basis. I engaged in a whole variety of activist projects, organizing students, organizing in the community around substance abuse, and working on developing a community-based alternative, a radical alternative to the kind of institutionalized, traditional approaches to dealing with people who are abusing such things as heroin. And I literally represented the party in a number of different things like that, including helping to organize the first interracial radical student community organization called Wantu Gente, which was African Americans and Puerto Ricans primarily. We sold the Black Panther paper. We also sold the Young Lord newspaper, Palante. It was a radical nationalist slash Marxist orientation political group. We had an office in the housing projects. That was part of what I was doing for the party.
What was the thinking behind the party being explicitly secular?
First of all, the party, its main objective and goal, obviously, was the liberation of black people. They dealt with those issues that were fundamental to black oppression, such as housing, health care, police repression, political prisoners or prisoners in general, the whole question of incarceration of black people, the struggle against issues like landlords and the oppressive conditions of avaricious businessmen, the economic oppression in the black community. It talked about global concerns as well and issues like reparation for black people's historical experience of oppression in the United States. And if you looked at every last one of those issues, were addressed through a 10-point program that the Black Panther Party put out, which talked about how to get redress for each concern of the black community. And none of those concerns were articulated in any kind of religious or metaphysical way. They talked about the resolution of them through very concrete, very realizable, albeit radical goals, when you compare it to the level of repression and the opposition's views about those demands. But nonetheless, none of them were about utilizing any other methods for liberation other than people's own efforts, their self-reliance on struggle, on the traditional methodology. The party was extremely important from the standpoint that it popularized the science of revolutionary organizing, and that came from becoming students of revolutionary thinking. Malcolm X, Kwame Nkrumah, Mao Zedong, Marx, and articulating these ideologies from the standpoint of their practical program. One of the things that the Black Panther Party talked about was taking theories that may have been seen in some cases as esoteric in the community, and what they use the phrase, breaking it down to the lowest common denominator, so that it could be articulated to people of ordinary persuasion in ways in which they understood. And that the Black Panther Party talked about breakfast for children programs, for example, where we talked about the issue of hunger, and it went ahead and started programs. He went to businesses, got them to donate food, and had young children before they went to school would come to the program, get breakfast, and at the same time, they would get a perspective on their oppression.
Right, right. It seems that there are organizations today that might pursue some of those things. You mentioned certainly not the communistic emphasis, but there are organizations that have programs and drug programs to help the community. But it seems today there's a common assumption that having faith is a very important part of this community process, and that faith is what seems to motivate some organizations, and they try to get the people that they serve to be faithful.
Faith is the rock bed of, you know, all religions. I've never been capable of these leaps of faith from a religious standpoint. I've always saw the material world as a way of examining all phenomena of oppression, and as well as knowledge and those things that are unknown. And sure, you have Cornel West and all of the, in fact, faith-based community that has engaged in social struggle, engaged in efforts to deal with, address the problems. Look at the civil rights movement. The leadership of it came from people who are in the faith-based community. When you look at what the base were, the base for people who were oppressed, the base of people who were fighting the most overt violence and terror in this country, and they just looked for leadership wherever it came. If it was from a secular direction, they embraced it. And if their religious leaders did not engage in objective secular methods for uplifting people from oppression, they rejected those religious leaders.
Is there a advantage from a revolutionary point of view, from your point of view, to explicitly refraining from the language of faith and religion?
Yes, I of course there is an advantage, and that advantage is that the two don't get mixed up. And in fact, because of, you know, often the weaknesses within revolutionary secular thinking and perspective in terms of the capacity to deliver programmatically to the community that they serve, often what happens is religion is a vacuum for a variety of reasons that is filled by religion. You look at what happened in Iran, for example, in 1979, they had the revolution that overthrew the Shah. Right. There was a coalition, there was a united front between secular activism, secular revolutionaries who were engaging in social struggle when the issues were about overthrowing oppression, the dictatorship of the Shah of Iran. And they believed, and I believe that this was a miscalculation on their part, that they needed to bring in the fundamentalist Islamic sector, because that was the sector that, because of their religious connection to the community, was able to inspire large numbers of people. Mm-hmm. What happened was, however, once the revolution took place, the religious institutions under Khomeini, the fundamentalists in Iran, took charge, and one of the first groups that they moved on were the revolutionaries, the left,
right.
The Iranian left.
Yeah, well, fundamental,
So that showed that there was an error, a strategic error, in believing that you could have an alliance with a fundamentally religious organization in a way that you relied on them and you saw that, you know, that they would deliver the kind of freedom that you believed in. I think that the only organization that you can have that truly liberates oppressed people is a secular organization. Not because a secular organization is not going to utilize religion. And when you utilize religion, one thing that you do is you begin to demarcate from one religion and another religion, and you begin to talk about oppression of religions, one religion oppressing another religion. So secularism, however, is not mutually excluding. Secularism, and this is, I think, where we may have a different understanding.
Right.
Secularism is not atheism.
Right.
Humanism is not atheism. What secularism is and humanism is the capacity to determine your destiny, your social, economic, and cultural policy, and without the interference and the intervention of religion, particularly organized religion. So I think that. Why? Because you have people who believe 100% in secularism who still go to church or the synagogue or to the mosque, but they believe that the only way you can relate to people in large numbers and deal with people in a truly democratic society is through a secular organization, and I believe that 100%.
Right.
When I see organizations that mix religion and secularism, I see an inherent weakness, okay, intrinsic and fundamental weakness in that organization. But ultimately, what you have to determine is what they do, how they articulate policy, how they what kind of program they have. If that policy and that program is right or overwrought with a religious interpretation, it would not succeed among black people, and black people have been expressing this fact for at least 2.5 centuries or more in this country. And so so what I'm saying is, even when you see an organization such as the Nation of Islam, you when you know the dynamics, the particulars on how why people joined the nation, you will see that they joined the nation in particular as a religious organization because of the secular issues that it dealt with 24/7. And they embraced the religion because that was what it was. That's what it called itself. All right. Now, sure, you have many Muslims, many people in the nation who left became Orthodox Muslims, and you understand the difference between Nation of Islam's interpretation of Islam, the difference between Nation of Islam's interpretation of Islam, and Orthodox Sunni Shia interpretation of Islam was a huge gulf. And so, for example, when Malcolm X left the Nation of Islam, ultimately he did his Hajj, did his pilgrimage to Mecca, he embraced Sunni Islam. But Malcolm demarcated between his religious convictions, he said they should be in the closet, and his political convictions, which he saw, he said, I'm a black nationalist freedom fighter. He didn't say, I was a Muslim freedom fighter.
Right, yeah. On the ballot and the bullet speech, he's very, very explicit on that.
Right.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, Professor Muntu Matsumela, thank you so much for joining us on Equal Time for Free Thought this evening.
And thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. And you've really been involved in some amazing work.
We're doing this. We're building the same project, you and
I. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
We'll definitely have you back again.
Great. All right. Talk to you soon.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Good
bye.
Night.
You are listening to Equal Time for Free Thought. This is our special two-hour fun drive. I want to thank the people who gave. And as I do, please call us, 212-209-2950. Pledge your support to our station, WBAI Radio, and Equal Time for Free Thought. I want to thank Mark, who gave an additional gift tonight, called in. I also want to thank Mrs. Hazel Saniflov Pinder. She says she loves the show, loves the station, so she called in and became a member for the first time. Welcome to the WBAI family. I want to thank Hillary Weiss, Mrs. Hillary Weiss.
Hey,
Hillary. Thank you for the gift tonight, and also I want to thank Lawrence Gray for a renewal of your membership tonight. Again, this is all on behalf of Equal Time for Free Thought. If you are listening in Jersey, in New York, wherever you are, in Brooklyn, in Queens, join these listeners, pledge your support tonight, 212-209-2950. If you call in and pledge at the $125 level, you will get Origins, which is a four-part Nova PBS special put together and narrated by Neil deGrasse Tyson. We'll be speaking with him very, very soon. At the $100 rate, you'll get African-American Humanist Principles, Living Like the Children of Nimrod by Anthony Pinn. For $65, you get a complimentary cup, T-shirt, hat, or mug to wear around and advertise WBAI and your membership. And for $25, you become a basic member. We are adding one premium,
yes,
which I'll let Arnell speak about in a moment. But I just want to say, for $150, you can get the six CD set of the archives of Malcolm X's speeches from Pacifica Archives. These, I've listened to them. They're incredible speeches. Everybody should have heard these in their lives.
Living history, folks.
Absolutely. As you heard Muntu mentioning Malcolm X and how by the end of his career he had really separated out the need to keep religion on the back burner and just worry about the here and now. And we have two short clips that we're going to play where you can hear Malcolm X saying this. These are both from Ballad on the Bullet speech, which is part of the $150 six CD set that we have at 212-209-2950. And here are the clips.
But I believe my religion is my personal business. It governs my personal life, my personal morals, and my religious philosophy is personal between me and the God in whom I believe.
That's right.
just as the religious philosophy of these others is between them and the God in whom they believe. And this is best this way. Were we to come out here discussing religion, we'd have too many differences from the outstart, and we could never get together. If we bring up religion, we'll have differences, we'll have arguments, we'll never be able to get together. But if we keep our religion at home, keep our religion in the closet, keep our religion between ourselves and our God, but when we come out here, we have a fight that's common to all of us against an enemy who is common to all of us. We're going to forget religion if we bring up. But I believe my religion is my. We're going to forget religion. If we bring up religion, we'll be in an argument. And the best way to keep away from arguments and differences, as I said earlier, put your religion at home, in the closet. Keep it between you and your God. Because if it hasn't done anything more for you than it has, you need to forget it anyway.
Okay, so that we have that 6-CD set available of Malcolm X Speaks, Malcolm X Speeches from the Pacifica Archives at the $150 level, and at the $125 level, we have the 4-part miniseries of Dr. Neil deGrasse Tyson hosting Origins, and I believe we have Dr. Neil deGrasse Tyson on the line with us right now. Let me introduce Dr. Tyson here. There are no short bios of Dr. Neil deGrasse Tyson on the World Wide Web. Believe me, I have checked. But just to name a few of his accomplishments and professional positions, Dr. Tyson is an astrophysicist and the director of the Hayden Planetarium at the American Museum of Natural History. He's also the host of the PBS TV program Nova Science Now. And he's the recipient of 7 honorary doctorates and the NASA Distinguished Public Service Medal. Dr. Tyson has written a large number of professional papers and authored several books for the public, including his most recent, Death by Black Hole and Other Cosmic Quandaries. His other books include Cosmic Horizons, Astronomy at the Cutting Edge, and Origins, 14 Billion Years of Cosmic History, which is the companion book for our featured DVD Thank You Premium.
Okay, we just lost him. We're trying to get him on our phone. Yep. Neil, why don't you just go through, or Sudden Sarah, through the premiums one more time?
No problem, Barry. And again, you're listening to 99.5 FM WBAI in New York. Program is Equal Time for Free Thought. And let's briefly go over the premiums before we get to our interview with Neil deGrasse Tyson. Again, $25 level gets you the basic membership to WBAI. $65 gets you the basic membership plus a T-shirt, mug, or tote bag, or mug. At the $100 level, we're authoring Dr. Anthony Pinn's book, African American Humanist Principles, Living and Thinking Like the Children of Nimrod. At the $125 level, we're offering the 4-part miniseries, Origins, 14 Billion Years of Cosmic Evolution, by author Neil deGrasse Tyson, whom I believe will be joining us for interview now.
Yes,
or now.
To pledge, before we do that, we need to give you the number 212-209-2950. Again, that is 212-209-2950. Give us a call. We want to do as much of this interview uninterrupted as possible, so call us and we will
continue we'll on.
Proceed.
Yes, thank you.
Dr. Tyson, thank you so much for taking the time to join us here on Equal Time for Free Thought.
Yeah, happy to be on your show.
All right. Dr. Tyson, as you know, we're featuring your amazing Origins video that you did for PBS.
Oh, excellent.
Yes, and what did you like most about the Origins project?
Well, what most people perhaps don't yet recognize is that some of the most profound questions that sit before us scientifically come about at the intersection of these traditionally separated scientific disciplines. You know, chemistry, biology, physics. We learn those all separately from different teachers, different professors, different textbooks. And what you find is if you ask the simple question, you know, what is the origin of life? Maybe you'll find that answer on Earth, but the universe is so huge, the answer might come from elsewhere, from some other planet. And if you're going to do that, the astrophysicist goes hand in hand with the biologist in search for life in the universe. If you want to look at the origin of the universe itself, we learn that the universe is really small, hot, and dense, and matter behaves very differently under those conditions than under everyday life. So the astrophysicist has to team up with the particle physicist. They have to talk to one another and publish papers together to come to some understanding of how the universe works. So the Origins Project was, in fact, this synthesis of the frontier of chemistry, biology, physics, geology, astrophysics, all in an attempt to answer certain basic questions, like what is the origin of life, origin of the Earth, the Moon, the stars, the galaxy, and the universe itself.
Right. And it's really a very powerful four-part miniseries. It really answers so many questions that I think a lot of people have. And at the same time, it seems like scientific knowledge is in really short supply. And what I wanted to ask you is, one of the things that you also seem to imply from your work is that having a better understanding of our universe and our place in it can really foster a sense of connectedness and even kind of a sort of naturalistic spirituality. And I was wondering if you can talk a little bit about that.
Well, yeah, it depends on how you think about the universe. So many people, you know, they stand here on Earth and they might look up if they're reminded, or if the moon is bright and beautiful, and it seems almost natural to think of life here on Earth as separate and distinct from what's going on in the rest of the universe, because of course it's, you look at your own circumstances as paramount in your portfolio of concerns. But as we learn more about the universe, we learn, for example, that the very chemical elements that comprise life on Earth were forged in the fires of stars that have exploded and scattered these elements, this enrichment across the galaxy, allowing the formation of planets and life and people. And so then we have this sort of chemical connectivity to the operations of the universe, that once you learn this, and you learn about sort of the cycles of stars that are being born, live out their lives, and die. And once you learn this, you realize, in fact, we're not just isolated from the universe. We're a part of the universe. And, in fact, the universe is in us. And this is, I find that to be a very almost spiritual revelation about our relationship to the cosmos. And, by the way, not only is that true, we know from biology that we have DNA. Large swaths of our DNA are in common with all the rest of the life on Earth, even life you wouldn't suspect that would be the case, like jellyfish or oak trees or yeast cells. And so we have a genetic connectivity with all life on Earth, a molecular connectivity with all life in the universe, and an atomic connectivity with all the matter in the universe. And so this is an offering. It is what we've learned about our place in the universe. And you present it to people, and what I've found is, no matter their background, be it secular or religious, they find it deeply moving to reflect on and think about. And in some ways, and in many ways, quite fulfilling. And there are those who don't know that, who see themselves as very small in the universe, and think that the study of the universe is just a big downer. Once they realize how small things are. But yes, it is small, no doubt about it. There's no exaggeration there. But it's the rest of this connectivity that allows one to sort of rise above that smallness and think of the universe not as this other place, but as our backyard.
Yeah, in terms of size, Dr. Tyson, we're sort of medium, aren't we? If you take into account subatomic particles, and aren't we sort of at a medium size, or?
Well, yeah, I mean, we're kind of medium because it's easier to measure things that way. But the size scales that are larger than us and greater than us go hugely smaller and hugely larger. And you'd have to, in order to be medium, you'd have to put everything on a log scale. So you'd have to measure things by powers of 10. And we'd be in an intermediate power of 10. Mm. So in that sense, we'd be medium. But If you looked on a linear scale, we're not medium. We're much closer to the small size than to the big size.
Right, right. Gotcha. Okay, not medium. Okay, you know, just wanted to get that straight. Dr. Tyson, our program today is focused on African American traditions that are actually not talked about in the media and not really well known, and the fact that there are the other premium in addition to Origins that we're offering is a book about the rich long history of African American humanist principles, the history of discovery and history of invention,
which I look forward to reading, by the way. I haven't read that yet, but
yes.
I look forward to that.
Good.
I can do that by donating money.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a simple way to do it.
That would actually be very appreciated.
I'm going to take that as a cue.
There
real
you go.
Quick. See, I picked up on that.
Right.
Well, you got people listening.
Us smallish, medium scale listeners here can call in at 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950. Pledge your support to Equal Time for Free Thought, WBAI Peace and Justice Radio. You can do that online as well at WBAI.org. And again, briefly, our premiums tonight for $125, you will get Origins. We are
the four-part miniseries featuring Dr. Neil deGrasse Tyson, director of the Hayden Planetarium and astrophysicist. And go on to Sarah.
At the $100 rate, we will give you the book, African American Humanist Principles by Anthony Pinn, subtitled Living Like the Children of Nimrod. Also at the $150 rate, you will get the exclusive Pacifica Archived 6-CD collection of Malcolm X's speeches. Very historic. Can't get them anywhere else. Again, that's 212-209-2950.
And What I wanted to ask you in relation to our subject, and thank you for that, Dr. Tyson.
I didn't know it would trigger a whole reaction. But
yeah, well, you never know. You get
this
cause and effect here. Uh-huh. But you had said that we had talked about how it seems that educators or people who write textbooks don't really go out of their way to actually show the strong African tradition of contribution to scientific thinking and mathematics. And you'd said you were saying something about Egypt and the way that's presented in school.
Yeah, I haven't seen the very latest textbook, but certainly the ones that I grew up on. You would never imagine or believe that there were any kind of civilizations at all in Africa of any note. And in fact, anytime Egypt was mentioned, it was never mentioned in the context of Africa. It was just some other sort of culture, and Africa was somehow some kind of separate unit that didn't even include Egypt. And I, when I reflect back on this, I just wondered what the long-term consequences of that would be to whole generations of people who are not left in a position to think of Africa as a continent that produced great civilizations. And even today, it's built into the language. There's a phrase, it's called sub-Saharan Africa. You know, so you have to, like, separate out Egypt from the rest of the conversation rather than just talking about Africa and the Egyptian civilization that was there, arguably one of the greatest there ever was in terms of longevity and wealth and achievements and architecture and agriculture. And so, and that's not all, of course, that was sort of omitted from Africa. And I don't even claim to be an expert in that because there are historians who know this much better than I. But even I, as a black American, going to school in the systems school, in the public school system, there was no opportunity for me to really get into the rest of what was in the cultural heritage of blacks in the world.
Which is one thing that's kind of really notable about your journey, because it seems like it's pretty difficult for anyone to just become an astrophysicist, having been an African American been even more challenging? Have there been extra challenges in that?
Well, I'd like to claim to be an acute observer of reactions to my trajectory over my life, because their reactions to what I've been doing. And I've looked long and hard and carefully, and I'm happy to report that in this, the 21st century, circumstances are very different than when I was coming up through the ranks. And what I mean by very different, for example, only one in 20 taxis won't stop for me now, whereas only 10 years ago, half the taxis, these are, you know, yellow taxis in New York City, would not stop for me. And none of them would stop if I were headed north from the American Museum of Natural History, which sits south of Harlem. And so, and it wouldn't matter how I was dressed. So in terms of reactions to me as a black person, a black male, I'm not nearly followed as much by security guards in department stores. And I've looked at other blacks in the stores, and it's less than what it once was. So there's a trend line here, and I think it's a good trend line. Doesn't mean it's all better. It means It means it's a lot better compared with what it once was. And when I was growing up, there were no visual examples, there was no media examples of blacks doing anything other than serving as civil rights leaders or as entertainers,
right?
Artist entertainers. And so to be a black scientist or a black lawyer, black medical doctor, black anything that was not in the traditional stereotype was a problem. It was a challenge because even when people were not explicitly racist about it, there was a matter of whether they were even thinking in the direction that you wanted to take your life. And if they were not, then there were opportunities that people might have otherwise wielded and then would close them off because they're not even thinking that way. So it's kind of a passive resistance, not necessarily an active resistance that was so common in the South during the Civil Rights era. So, and I grew up in the North in New York City. So in some sense, I felt my path of interest was the path of most resistance. You know, in high school, people said, oh, why don't you join these athletic teams? And no one said, why don't you join the physics club? So my act of joining the physics club was swimming upstream against people's expectations. And this was throughout my whole life, growing up throughout graduate school. And I needed a sort of an energy reserve to combat this, or at least to resist it, and to always land back on my feet, to maintain my trajectory. And it has me worry how many people did not have the same sort of supply of energy that I carried with me and then ended up with blood on the tracks. And that concerns me deeply as I go forward.
Right. And you know, it's been said by many who've experienced both the very blatant racism in the South and the more subtle brand of that in the North, that the North can be even more damaging in some ways because it's insidious and because
It's hidden. It's hidden.
Yeah, and when someone's kind of being blatantly racist to you, I think it's easier to dismiss.
Or at least it's easier to know what you're up against.
Yeah, you know what you're up against.
It's in your face, and it's there. Now now work to step around it, above it, or below it.
Yeah, yeah. Couple of my colleagues have a question or two for you, so if I can throw this over Neil Murphy. He has a question. Go ahead.
Thank you very much, Anil. Dr. Tyson, I'm curious to know your opinion on the resurgence of what's been called the new atheists, the Sam Harris, the Daniel Dennett, the Richard Dawkins. And you had an interesting experience at the Beyond Belief convention where you had a bit of a verbal sparring match with Sam Harris and others about not only the resurgence of the new atheists, but the methods that they're using to achieve their goal of advocating a more secular understanding of the universe. I was wondering your comments you would have on the resurgence of this new atheism and the methods that they're using.
Yeah, sure. First, I don't know that it's a resurgence because I don't know if it was ever really as visible as it has been in the presence of these books that have just come out. There are like three or four,
right,
by three prominent authors. One of them is God Is Not Great.
Christopher Hitchens.
Yeah, exactly. And Letter to a Christian Nation. And there's, of course, The God...
The God Delusion.
The God Delusion. And Sam Harris's his first bestseller.
The End of Faith.
The End of Faith, exactly. So you combine all of these. It's one thing for them to have been written. It's another thing for them to have made it onto the New York Times bestseller list. So that means people are reading it, people are reacting to it, they're showing up on talk shows. And so that means it is an active as part of the modern dialogue. And I, as an educator, I feel strongly about that if you have a point of view, what matters is not whether you're right. Yes, of course that matters, or whether your arguments are well presented. What matters is whether you present your arguments in a way that people will want to listen to you. And at the Beyond Belief conference, this was a workshop that by invitation only. It had no more than, 80 people at it. I just happened to get an invitation because I'd written an essay on critical of the intelligent design movement. But I otherwise have no broader deep forays into these subjects, primarily because others do, and so they don't need my effort here. But so I was invited in, and I just heard Richard Dawkins speak, and I'd read his great works, the Selfish Gene and other books of his. Very impressed with his writing and his intellect and his background. And I just heard him speak, and he was so acerbic in his views and so intolerant and so I'm smart and you're dumb in reference to those who might be religious. I just felt he was being ineffective. Because, like I said, what matters is not what is your argument, but what is the likelihood that someone will want to listen to you? And he's a professor of the public understanding of science. So I accused him of failing in the subtitle of his, failing to fulfill the subtitle of his position that he holds. The subtitle is Professor of the Public Understanding of Science. And when he speaks, if you don't already know you're going to agree with him, you're likely to be completely turned off and walk away. So I said he's being ineffective. And in fact, and he agreed, he's not being as effective as he could be. And then he agreed. He actually said, you're right. I'm guilty as charged. And then he went on to say that he's not as bad as others are. And he cited a couple of other examples. But that was my only sort of sparring match with him. Otherwise, they're trying to make the world safer, realizing that religious fanaticism and fundamentalism, the intolerance of that is creating levels of conflict that are incompatible with a civilized culture.
Well, I guess you should be congratulated then for having Dawkins understand his misunderstanding, so to speak.
Oh, yeah, I guess so. I didn't realize. And that segment ended up getting YouTubed and heavily...
Just like everything else. Believe me, I looked.
And it got heavily reviewed, and I got a lot of email on it, a lot of supportive email. And so I was impressed by the public's response to that.
Brief follow-up, then I'll turn it back over to Arnell. There's often a lot of discussions about science and religion, either science versus religion or science and religion can be compatible. And there have been books and anthologies written about exactly if there is a relationship between science and religion or if there's no relationship at all. Do you think that, for instance, if you look at Stephen Jay Gould, I'm assuming you're familiar with, about NOMA and how they don't have to overlap with each other and that both can learn from each other, whereas Dawkins might take a more confrontational approach. Do you think that there needs to be confrontation between those two worldviews?
That's a very interesting point and question. First of all, the statements that science and religion can harmonize are vastly overstated. Vastly. If you look at the way science is practiced in modern times and the way religion is practiced, there's simply no intersecting points at all. That's just it. Now, there was a day where that was not the case. There was a lot of attempts to merge the two. Isaac Newton spent a big fraction of his life trying to extract whatever science he could out of the Bible through chronologies of the ancient kingdoms and the like. And so he was able to get a little bit of history out of it, but there was no meaningful science that he was able to extract from it. And Galileo made similar attempts. And so there was an attempt to try to work it long ago, but they have all failed. And the way they are now practiced, there is no intersection. And what we have to remember, and what all these people are forgetting, either conveniently or because they just hadn't thought about it, is that there was a day before the era of what I'll call modern science, the last 500 years, where the scientific method and the methods and tools of science became the means by which you can separate what is true and what is not about the world. That basically is traceable from Galileo and others of his contemporaries onward. Before then, there was science, but it was susceptible to social mores and political values and whatever else was going on. So, it's a simple point. Before that time, religious people were certain that the Bible was also a textbook of the natural world. It was an account of the laws of physics and the origins of the sun, moon, earth, and planets. As science moved on and demonstrated that these claims are untenable, especially as reported in Genesis. They're just simply untenable. What happened was the religious community slowly, one by one, began to shed those claims of the Bible, retaining the other claims of the Bible that are either hard or impossible to address scientifically. Claims just how to treat other people, you know, all this spirituality of the Bible as distinct from the geophysics, astrophysics of the Bible. And so today, the people who are claiming harmony are those that have used, wittingly or unwittingly, they have invoked modern physics to completely remove all claims of science that were previously made about the contents of the Bible. And only under those conditions can they say that they're now harmonious, because they've already ceded the scientific claims of the Bible. And that when what's left over has no scientific claims at all, and science is a long way from touching it, if ever. And there they claim harmony. And so it's a long after the fact editing of the claims of the Bible that allows people to say that in modern times.
Yeah, and it's an ever shrinking area that they, as science explains more, they just move on to whatever is left that is the
gap. Continue to fight it. I mean, that's I don't mind the ones that keep moving on. That this is their spirituality and it's their philosophy of life. It's the ones that are in denial of the actual discoveries of science and then try to influence the teaching of others of these results that can sort of undermine the scientific enterprise within a nation, America in particular, which is subject of recent concern, given the trend lines that we've seen in school boards and the like. And so when that happens, then you've lost what it is to be science. And other countries haven't lost this notion, and we'll just watch our economic foundations erode.
Which is why we need to remind our listeners to please support the one Free Thought Radio broadcast on the airwaves. And this is Equal Time for Free Thought. You're listening to 99.5 WBAI. This is our fundraiser, and Sincera is going to go over our thank you premiums that are available.
Okay, I just wanted to, again, the importance of not just understanding what is true in science, what theories are true, but why they're true, which is one of the things that I think is so important and special about the Origins PBS series, which we will give you for the $125 pledge rate, because this really does one of the biggest things to arm people. There's an all-out assault on science in this country, I think, from the administration on down, the Bush administration, I should name them. And in the face of that, really, people understanding what's true and why it's true and learning a scientific method and critical thinking. So this PBS series, again, call in 212-209-2950. For the $100 rate, you can get Anthony Pinn's book, African American Humanist Principles, Living Like the Children of Nimrod. That's 212-209-2950. For $25 is our basic membership rate. $65, you'll get a complimentary cup, hat, T-shirt, or mug. Thank you to the caller. For $150, you will get Malcolm X's, the complete set of his speeches from the Pacifica Archive. Again, the number is 212-209-2950. Please call in, and thank you so much for being with us, Dr. Tyson.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
Yes, and Dr. Tyson, if you could bear with us, we'd like to play another clip. We had been playing clips from Origins, and we'd like to play another clip here. It's 2 minutes, and can you stay with us?
I can, sure, go
okay,
ahead.
Okay, great. We're going to play another clip from Origins right now.
The grand dance of our universe is a breathtaking vision. Stars parade across the sky in lockstep, night after night. The galaxies spin, vast cities of stars bound together to create stunningly elegant forms. Until recently, our own lifetime, we couldn't hope to answer the most basic questions about the cosmos. Has the universe always been here? Did it have a beginning? I first encountered those grand mysteries as a 9-year-old kid. We came here on a field trip to the Hayden Planetarium. It looked a lot different then, but that first trip changed my life. More or less on the spot, I decided to become an astrophysicist, even though I could barely pronounce the word. And now, all grown up, I've returned to the Hayden
as its director. And over that time, our understanding of the universe has been transformed again and again. Astronomers had long believed that our cosmos had always existed, eternal and unchanging. In its last version, the idea even had a name, the steady-state theory.
But that was really just an assumption. And like so much received wisdom in science, it would ultimately be proved wrong by accident.
The breakthrough came in the early days of the space race. In 1962, astronauts were heroes. And for a while, America went space crazy.
And that music might have clued you into thinking you're listening to the Golden Age of Radio with Max Speed, but no, you're just listening to the Equal Time for Free Thought 2-hour fundraising special. And currently, Arnell is speaking with Neil deGrasse Tyson, who, and we're offering his origins at the $125 level. Give us a call at 212-209-2950 and support the only true free thought program on the air, Equal Time for Free Thought on WBAI. Arnell?
We might add that the Golden Age of Radio should be back, I think, next week.
It's normal time slot.
Yeah, it's normal time slot. Normally, that's what the listeners here would be listening to. So, Dr. Tyson, you're still with us, right?
Yes, I am.
Good. So, yeah, that just is a little example of amazing. First of all, there's an amazing soundtrack to Origins. It seems to really, it's very diverse. You have rock, you have classical, you have all kinds of stuff going on.
You want it to be acoustically engaging as well as visually, because that's, of course, any modern listener would almost require that of something that they
So
we were happy to oblige.
Talks a little bit of science, too, from what I hear.
That's right.
Yeah, if you're not very careful, you learn something new every day. Dr. Tyson, in reference to the new atheism, you also are, in terms of scientific, being an advocate for scientific literacy and the scientific method as the most effective lens we have on having a practical relationship with the world around us, you've been getting a great deal of, it seems, press and there's quite a buzz as you being one of the foremost advocates of science. And I'm wondering if the kind of buzz that's coming up because of the new atheism is something that benefits science. Does it benefit the cause that you're trying to further?
Well, it's not clear. Consider, for example, that nearly 40% of all American scientists claim some sort of religiosity. They claim a personal God, so a God to whom they pray with some regularity. This is a question that's been asked multiple times over the past century, and that number has remained relatively constant over that time. And there's some variation between chemists and biologists and physicists. For example, mathematicians and engineers have a higher rate of the claim of a personal God than, and at the lowest of that list you have biologists, astrophysicists and physicists, and chemists are in midway. And so the fact that that number is not zero ought to tell people that being a scientist is not synonymous with being an atheist. And by the way, people self-answer this question, you know, are you, you know, do you claim a personal God? If you just simply said, do you go to church every week and try to use that as a measure, it could be that people go to church for social purposes because they like the bake sales or they just like meeting people, or it's just the rhythm of the community that's what people do. And so to make sure you're separating those for whom their God really matters from those where they're just going through the motions, this question was worded in that way. And so that number is not zero. So what that means is this is not a battle between atheist scientists and God-fearing public. It's much more subtle than that. And the real issue here at hand, because it doesn't matter much to me how many people in this world are religious. That doesn't concern me. What concerns me is, are you scientifically literate? And so, by the way, I think religion should be taught in the schools. And one of the big problems is that it's not.
Mm-hmm.
And but religion, for example, comparative religion, so you will know that however it is you're brought up, you will know that there are 22 other religions in the world that feel just as strongly about their God as you do about yours. People ought to know that before they become adults. Otherwise, it's quite a shock to them to realize that not everyone has heard of Jesus in the level that a Christian has, or not everyone has heard of Muhammad the way a Muslim has. And so that's just really useful information in modern society. What concerns me, because there's no tradition of the scientist knocking down the Sunday school classroom, telling the preacher to teach anything from a science curriculum. There's no tradition there. There are no picketers outside of churches. So given that, there should be no tolerance for any effort of a religious community to try to alter a science curriculum at any level, elementary school, junior high school, and certainly not in college. And so I'm trying to make sure that science gets taught as science. Whatever else happens, let it be. I'm not as concerned about the rest of that as Sam Harris and others are. That's, yes, one should be concerned about them. I have a certain concern budget.
Right.
As I distribute to the things I care about, I care that we have a scientifically literate public, because therein is the greatest engine of economic growth society has ever known, our innovations in science and technology. If we undermine that, we've undermined our entire place in our entire relationship to the geopolitical community.
Right, right. And the miniseries is available by our guest, Dr. Neil deGrasse Tyson, who hosts this PBS miniseries. He's written the companion book, Origins, 14 Billion Years of Cosmic Evolution, at the $125 level as a way of saying thank you for supporting Equal Time for Free Thought and WBAI. And 212-209-2950. And our own Neil has another question for you, Dr. Tyson.
Sure.
Go ahead, Neil.
Thank you very much. Dr. Tyson, you actually segued into my question. Now, in my own professional life, I'm a high school social studies teacher in an urban district in New Jersey. And I was thinking about your point about scientific literacy, and it seems to me, and I think you'd agree, that you know, having a sound science education in the public schools would seem to be paramount. If you had to kind of give your state of the union on scientific education today, what would that be, and what would be the positive prescriptions you would do to alleviate any problems you might see?
Well, let me first... it's my state of the union address. it's bad, I'll tell you. Well, first of all, let me just reflect on that New Jersey incident from several months ago when it was a junior high school student who recorded, was it his social studies teacher?
Matthew LeClaire, whom we've had on this show.
Yeah, you have had him on the show.
Cheap plug, but it's worth mentioning.
Yeah, we had him here in our last fund drive in our studio.
Okay,
yeah.
And so, you know, of course there were many people responding to that case, and I didn't feel the need to jump in because I don't need to tread where others are treading just fine. I'll find some place where others don't know yet to tread, or I think I can tread better. But then I realized everybody was missing a point. Just to remind your listeners, but who really needs reminding of this, but there was a student who managed to tape record his teacher saying blatantly Christian religious statements within the public school classroom. The ones that stuck in my mind was the assertion that the Big Bang and evolution mm-hmm. were just theories, and that Noah's Ark carried dinosaurs. Of course, he made other comments as well that were
not
more strictly...
Believe that will get you to...
What's that?
That not to believe that will get you a ticket to hell.
Oh, exactly, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, thanks.
And they all magically existed on the same boat and didn't eat each other to death.
Right, right. So that was the other side of that story. And so there was everyone crying out, this is a violation of the separation of church and state and the First Amendment and on and on and on. And I thought about it, and I said, no, you're all wrong. So I wrote a letter to the New York Times. I tried to make it as short, as simple as can be. And all I said was, after citing the dinosaurs on the Noah's Ark and that evolution and Big Bang is just a theory, I said, this is not an issue of the separation of church and state. This is an issue of the separation of ignorant, scientifically illiterate teachers, people from the ranks of teachers in the public school system. That was the whole letter.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh, okay.
So my point is, if he's saying Noah's Ark carried dinosaurs, he's just simply being stupid, okay? And those people should not be teachers. If he's saying Jesus is your Savior, He's not being stupid. He's being religious, and then the religion doesn't belong in the classroom, okay? Because one of those is testable, and the other is a claim based on a faith-based belief system. And I'm happy to separate those two factors. And so had he only said Jesus is your Savior, then you've got your First Amendment issues. He's trying to make scientific assertions that he derives from his read of the Bible. And that's where science can step in and say, no, you're wrong. And your belief system is irrelevant here. It's simply demonstrably wrong. And if you have teachers who believe they understand science but in fact don't, they don't belong as teachers. And so my State of the Union would be, if you have people who are teaching science, they got to be scientifically literate. Otherwise, what hope do we have of their students ever becoming scientifically literate? And science literacy is not simply how many facts you can recite. It's what is your understanding of how the world works? And that understanding is an awareness of the interconnectivity of things. This is part of what the Origin series tries to address, not only the book, but, of course, the four-part video series. It tries to sensitize you to our place in the universe, and therein are the roots of science literacy. And because once you understand that, you can think creatively about it, and you can develop curriculum that explores what is known and unknown about that frontier. Without it, you just, you know, what are you?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And Dr. Tyson,
that's my State of the Union address.
Yeah, well, that's well received, because the fact is that it's really not enough to talk about what we don't believe in. We really need to talk about what we know and what we can rely on and what is a vision for looking at our universe in a way that is truly beneficial, because it's got practical applications, and talking about what we know as something that we really can have as a real alternative way to understand our connection to the world, which is for which there is empirical proof, and that's what you're out there on the front lines doing, and doing it so much more effectively than many of us, which is great, because you are our hero.
Well, thank you.
This is not a plea for free tickets either. He means it literally. He means it seriously. So
I'm a member of the museum, so I'm getting my free.
Yeah.
But actually, let me make a point that I didn't fully complete in response to a couple of your questions. My visibility as an astrophysicist who occasionally gives a soundbite that the media likes, and the simultaneous appearance of these atheist books has forced a kind of shotgun marriage between the platform that I bring to the public, which is just let's be scientifically literate and enjoy the universe, and those who are sort of anti-religion out there. And I've never been anti-religion. I've been brought onto the stage because I'm an informed scientist and people want my opinions. And so the extent of my opinions or my perspectives are simply that it doesn't belong in the science classroom. Even if it belongs in some other classroom, like a philosophy class or a history of religion class or a history of human thought class, doesn't belong in the science classroom. And so I'm happy to say that multiple times, but I don't have the energy or the interest to argue any of those other points, especially since we've got these other folks who are apparently doing just fine a job at it. So.
Well, we thank you for the points that you are willing to get out there to people, because I really think that's the key in getting people to think the way we need them to think, so that our world will become a little bit safer than the volatile way that just faith-based thinking seems to lead us.
Yeah, I bet if faith-based thinking were not the sources of wars and bloodshed and conflict, that those books would have never had the occasion to be written.
Well, I do think that part of the shotgun marriage here that's been propelled forward is a hunger among literally millions of people in this country for reality-based thinking on, you know, in response to a lot of religious fundamentalism fused into power structures, but also in terms of, as you were saying, scientific method itself being debased and the attempt to introduce faith-based thinking into science. This was a big thing in the evolution textbook sticker, the introduction of non-science-based thinking into the realm of science. And I think that a defense of that and a substantive defense of it, people are curious and interested in things that they took for granted perhaps before. And so I would have to say, as much as there are differences, and that's an important thing, I think there's an objective hunger among people.
Well, I would add that if you normally, when you look at a list of the most populous religions in the world, there's the, you know, so Christianity is more Christians than anything else, and then next are Muslims, and you go on down the list. But what that list never includes is the people who have no associated religion at all.
Mm-hmm.
People who are either secular, humanist, atheists, and agnostics. If you add those people together as a group, it comes in third in the world, above all other religions, after Christianity and Islam. And so, but of course, when you are agnostic, atheist, or just a secular humanist, you don't have the sort of the organizational structures that exist for these religions. And so they typically don't ever get heard as a single voice, politically or culturally or economically or the like. And so it's easy for the rest of the world to think that they don't exist at all. But when you have books such as the ones we've described making the bestseller list, when you have the appetite for science that I know is real because I keep getting called upon to speak to it, I think there's, just as you said, there's not only there's a hunger, there's an appetite for the natural world that I'm happy to be a part of and to serve that curiosity.
Well, Dr. Tyson, we thank you so much for
taking the time
to be with us tonight and for all your good work. And hopefully we can have you on again. And we really, really, really thank you for being part of this WBAI fund drive and the one little island of free thought scientific thinking here on the airwaves.
We'll try to make the island bigger, but it'll probably stay an island for a while.
I hear you. Thank you so much, Dr. Tyson.
And I'll go back and I'll make my pledge.
Good.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, sir.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye.
As he was just saying, there is not a forum, you know, except for a station like this and a radio, this program in particular, where you have a coming together of scientific thinking, atheistic thinking, humanistic thinking, reality-based thinking of a wide variety. He was making a point I think is very important, that it's not the same as organized religion, that it's got an agenda, it's got a church, it's got an institution. And for many good reasons in the reality-based, reason-based world, there's a diversity of thought. We are proud to be Equal Time for Free Thought, a host for these voices, the disparate and divergent but very relevant voices of atheists, humanists, secular thinkers, scientific thinkers around the world. So call us at 212-209-2950. Again, that's 212-209-2950. We're closing up. We're about to wrap up very soon, the end of our fund drive. Don't miss your chance to pledge to support Equal Time for Free Thought. Keep this as a forum for reality-based, reason-based discussion each Sunday, 212-209-2950. And at the $125 rate, you will get Origins, the PBS special, NOVA, done by Neil deGrasse Tyson, who we were just speaking with. Fascinating four-part segment on the origins of the universe, our planet, and life itself. At the $150 rate, you can get all six CD set of Malcolm X's speeches from the Pacifica Archive. This is a historic set. You can't get it anywhere else. Call and pledge at WBAI, 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950.
And at the $100 level, we have the African-American Principles, Living and Thinking Like the Children of Nimrod by
African-American Humanist Principles.
Yeah, sorry, African-American
Nobody's
Humanist
getting the title
Principles.
Right tonight.
Yes, that's right. Well, it's a long title. Maybe not the catchiest title, but certainly
grounded in substance, a
notable book, grounded in substance, and a substance of African-American history that is all but forgotten, and it needs to be out there. And this is a book that you can give to your local school. This is a book that you can share with your church group. This is a book that you can share Yes, you can, absolutely, because Dr. Pinn talks about even congregations that are humanist and here and now in their orientation and activist, and talks about a tradition that is all but forgotten.
And we just wanted to mention, Arnell, that if that stretches your wallet a little bit too much, we do have two other premiums mm-hmm. that you can get, the $25 basic membership to WBAI, and at $65 level, you get the basic membership plus a tote bag, mug, cap, or T-shirt. Again, give us a call. This is the home stretch, folks. We need you to give us a call at 212-209-2950.
Or you can go on the internet on
www.wbai.org. And you can also put this on your credit card. If you've already pledged and you are a member, you can extend your membership and just add this, tag this right on. So if there's some people out there who are like, gee, I'd really like to get that premium, but I already pledged last time. Well, the good news is you can extend your membership.
Or buy a membership for somebody else?
Well, I'm not sure. I think that you cannot do that.
And speaking of that, if you want to call people in our tally room, we should give a big shout out to
the volunteers who
are working very hard and answering the phones and taking the calls. We want to give a big shout out to them. And if you call in, you can find out exactly whether you can get a membership for a friend or not. Briefly, let's review the four premiums: $25 level, basic membership to WBAI, $65 level, the membership to WBAI, plus a tote bag, cap, mug, or T-shirt. At the $100 level, we're offering the book, African American Humanist Principles, Living and Thinking Like the Children of Nimrod by Dr. Anthony Pinn. At the $125 level, we're offering the PBS miniseries, Origins by Neil deGrasse Tyson, who came on for a full 50 minutes. Where else are you going to hear 50 minutes with Neil deGrasse Tyson?
Director of the Hayden Planetarium. Astrophysicist.
A man who,
about to become a member of WBAI. Equal time for free.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah. You better call in. And, you know, so.
I want to thank the people who have pledged. I want to thank Perry Beto, Anita Mackey for renewing your pledge, Ronald Duncan for your additional gift tonight, and you, Victory Teresto.
Victoni.
Yeah. I apologize.
Victoni. There you go.
Yes. Also, thank you for becoming a new member tonight, Tony Marshall. Thank you for your additional gift. Bernardo Devery, thank you for the gift tonight. Richard Berner, thank you for renewing. And Reynold Yuska, thank you all for calling in. Join those pledgers tonight. If you are listening, pick up the phone, 212-209-2950. Our last couple of minutes here, call in additional pledges right now, 212-209-2950.
And once again, thanks for our volunteers for coming in and manning the phones. Greatly appreciated. You're the guys that keep us running.
Any last words, Arnell, before I wrap?
Famous last words. I think we're ready to wrap up
here.
212-209-2950.
Keep those calls coming in, and thank you for your generous support.
Everything old is new again, as they say, right?
Please join us after the fun drive.
In the house.
Okay, could I get a word in here?
Please join
us after the fun drive for Equal Time for Free Thought. This has been Barry Simon with Arnell Doré, Neil Murphy, and Sansara Taylor. Equal Time for Free Thought was engineered by Sean Rhodes. Special thanks to our researcher and web script, Joel Schlossberg. We got some transcripts on our web going up, so you can check out that for scripts we don't have audio for necessarily. Thanks. Shout out to our founder, Sarah Kay, and to Arnell's daughters, Valerie and Bridget, whom you heard in front of the program. Archives of some of our past programs, including this one soon, can be found at our website, link from njhn.org. Special thanks to Tim Ridge and the New Jersey Humanist Network for hosting our website. Coming up next, as Neil hinted, is Everything Old is New Again with Dave Kenny. And remember, until next time, tune in, pay it forward, and
question everything.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
I don't know. It's powerful music. It's easy to sing. Are you ready?